Welcome to Didn't I Blow Your Mind This Time? As you can tell, we're a little rusty. This is season two.
It's been a little bit of a delay. Yeah, we're resting nicely on a little bit of vacation. It's almost season two, Duncan. It's in between.
This All right. Well, I don't know. I thought it maybe be a bonus. That's like, I don't know, an Easter egg somewhere in the season. I didn't even know podcasts had seasons. So
some do, some don't.
I'm learning a lot on this show.
From me?
Well, I didn't say that, but maybe just about podcasting in general. Anyway, welcome to Didn't I Blow Your Mind This Time, the podcast where my co-host and I, Lex, take turns trying to blow each other's minds with our movie picks. What does that mean exactly? We're not saying the movies are obscure or super esoteric or really out there or hard to find. They just have to be a movie that the other person has not seen. That we are passionate about.
In this case, and which qualifies it as a bonus episode, neither one of us had seen this. We decided to run with something that we mentioned in an earlier season one episode and give it a go. So we're coming in fresh, both of us, right?
Very fresh, very fresh. Mention of this movie raised a few eyebrows on Twitter.
Really?
Season one. So this was a fun one to dig into.
It is.
Or at least that's what we thought.
It's Rat Boy from 1986. The reason why we decided to do this is because we stumbled upon its existence. Well, I did. You said you had seen or known about it when you were a kid, but we were talking about The Gauntlet and Sandra Locke in The Gauntlet, and she directs and stars in this movie, Rat Boy.
And yes, I did remember this movie played repeatedly on HBO as a kid. I didn't watch it because obviously that would be breaking the rules of the podcast. Mm. I mean, I didn't know when I was eight I was going to have a podcast.
Sure,
it wasn't even invented then. I did find the few little clips I saw as I was channel surfing of it scary. I found Rat Boy scary. It did not seem interesting. It looked cheap, not up my alley. And so I waited all these years to dig in and watch it.
Yeah, it's a journey.
Rat Boy, it's so hard to be different.
I was interested in Sandra Locke and what we discovered last time enough to watch at least one of her movies, which was A Reflection of Fear. It has Robert Shaw and a handful of others, and it's a really beautifully shot movie with one big twist at the end. I won't say what it is, but her performance in it is awesome. It was a real joy to watch, and it's super creepy and pretty effective. And I'm also dying to watch, and maybe you've seen this, Death Game, which is the basis for Knock Knock, which was that Eli Roth movie with Keanu Reeves a few years back, Ana de Armas.
Oh, I watched Knock Knock.
But have you seen Death Game with Colleen Camp and Sandra Locke and Seymour Cassell in the same premise?
I haven't. I don't like to be shamed on the show. I love Colleen Camp.
Well, maybe this becomes a future bonus episode that we pull out.
Bonuses on bonuses on bonuses. But where's the meat? Where are the regular
episodes?
Let's
get into it.
We'll get to that. Now, I listened. I don't want to plug someone else's podcast on our podcast, but I did listen to You Must Remember This. I'm a fan. The Karina Longworth podcast. Right now, she's talking about erotic 90s.
Oh, I'm aware.
So she did the other Sandra Locke's sophomore directorial effort,
oh,
Impulse.
Yeah.
But she also talks a little bit about Rat Boy, and I'm not going to quote her podcast because we covered this as well last season.
True.
About the acrimony between Clint and Sandra Locke. I believe Lex thought it was all chocolates and roses, and it was during the days of The Gauntlet and the Any Which Way But Loose movies. But Rat Boy was really the movie where it came about, the friction of Rat Boy and maybe the lack of success of the movie critically and commercially was possibly the beginning of the end for Sandra and Clint. His company produced it, and he got, you know, her the deal at Warner Brothers to make the movie. She discovered the script, and then according to her, he was too hands-on. shooting down a lot of her ideas.
I would love to, I won't go on too long, but just to give some context, read a little blurb. Here we go. Between 1990 and 1993, Warner Brothers rejected more than 30 scripts that Locke pitched to the studio, including those for Junior and Addicted to Love, and refused to let her direct any of their in-house projects. When her contract had yielded zero directing assignments 3 years in, Locke became convinced that the deal was a sham. It turns out that Clint was controlling things from afar and paying to have her in this contract, but asserting a lot of control and using Warner Brothers as a front. And so that's sort of the context for just how bitter and nasty things got between the two of them. But what I didn't really realize is what a presence as a female director she was in the late 80s and early 90s. It says she was one of a, this is crazy, but it's the reality. She was one of 11 female directors in 1990, the year Warner Brothers released her sophomore feature Impulse. By the time of Trading Favors in 1997, her fourth effort, still only 1% of all films were made by women per the Directors Guild of America.
Well, and just for context, yes, and all that with Sandra and Clint, that was all post Rat Boy, but
right.
Rat Boy was really where I think a lot of the seeds of unhappiness were initially sown. And if you're not a Clint fan, you will be much less of one after you read about his Palimony
That's
suit.
Absolutely true.
So I really went into this movie, and I think I expressed this season one with the hope and the attitude of championing Sandra Locke and excited that this movie might and could be a hidden little gem.
Yeah, there is. I will say that for the first half of this movie, I was very excited, and it had everything to do with surprises, cameos, and just the absolute madness of what the premise is and where this story goes. So I was regularly on my toes. I had no idea where this was going. And so that was a pleasure for me to watch. There is an actual boy who is half rat, half human. In this story, that is what it's about. The makeup effects are by Rick Baker. The rat boy is actually played by a woman, Shannon Baird, who was a childhood Mickey Mouse Club actor, also on H.R. Puffin Stuff in the 70s. And the actor's voice really? Is a man's voice who was a co-star with Sandra Locke in A Reflection of Fear. So
really got pigeonholed when you go from Mouseketeer to Rat Boy. That's really a niche.
She had trouble after Rat Boy. Big surprise.
I thought not to jump ahead, but I just want to say I thought the Rat Boy's performance was almost too good.
I agree.
It's almost too heartbreaking.
I've been thinking about Rat Boy today. I watched it last night, and the animal elements of Rat Boy are just heart melting.
But let's back up. I'm not going to do a play-by-play of the movie, but I just want to set the scene for the viewers that haven't seen it, which I imagine is most of them, that we start with this LA skyline. We've got a couple making out. We're in some kind of like...
A couple? It's the redheaded kid from Children of the Corn with braces, and the kid that's sitting on top of the car is the other guy from Summer School, not Chainsaw, but the other guy.
Right, right. Well, I was going to get to that. I was going to say we were in some kind of dump / car graveyard / character actor heaven.
Oh, my God.
Because you get those two actors, and then lo and behold, a couple Rat Boy hunters show up, and it's Charlie Cheswick from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And I can't even I had to look up the other actor's name, Larry Hankin,
yep.
who you always see. So with Larry Hankin and Sidney Lassick. And I was like, wow, this is fun. Sandra Locke's colonizing all her favorites.
Oh, that's just the beginning. Yeah. Larry Hankin is the guy they cast as Kramer in the show within the show of Seinfeld. That's that's how I know him.
Are you accusing me of stealing the raisins?
Oh, no, no.
Now,
no,
why would I steal a box of raisins?
No, you wouldn't. Nobody would. You know, it's just that they were missing and... Well, I'm just inquiring.
Let me give you a word of advice, okay? I want you to stay away from me. I don't want to talk to you. And I don't want to hear any more of your stupid little notes and suggestions. I don't like you.
Yeah, I also want to say that you quickly enter... So Rat Boy is kind of set up as a boogeyman where these kids are... These kids are making out and like throwing firecrackers and drinking on a hillside junkyard that overlooks LA, which is its own sort of amazing thing. They get scared off, and then these two guys roll in. It's just sort of a seamless flow of characters, and they enter Rat Boy's world by going through an old car trunk. I thought that was really cool. That as a kid, that definitely would have been exciting to me, this the entrance into Rat Boy's world, and you find this little rat's nest underneath the ground where Rat Boy lives. And yeah, as you said, they kidnap him.
Yeah, you kind of brace yourself for some fun. It's it's the 80s. It's you're like, are we going into like some kind of I don't know, Joe Dante type, you know, B movie Spielberg world with this fun Rat Boy. But Rat Boy shows up. And Rat Boy is just real sad.
He's real just sad.
Real sad.
Well, he's a rat and he does rat things, which is collect old doodads and listens, sets up that he listens to Personality. That's his favorite song, as we will discover. He plays it over and over again on a little record player. Yes, very sad. But we quickly shift to the next day and why there are reporters and cops there investigating Rat Boy's kidnapping. I have no idea, but that's where we are. And then we meet Sandra Locke. We don't know what she's about. And her background gets twistier and twistier as the story goes on. But
the thread is lost by 5 minutes into this movie. When Sandra Locke appears, she's posing as a reporter. Later, you find out she's not a reporter. She's some kind of window dresser. But you don't really know what she was doing at the dump. She says she lives by the dump.
A window dresser. Let's just stop there for a second. Is that a big thing? Is that a career?
In the 80s, it was. Okay. Sure. All right. Have you seen Mannequin? Everybody was a window dresser. Okay. Window dressing is an art.
Okay. Clearly.
There's something in the premise of this movie that keeps coming up that's very confusing. And that is that you are never quite clear who knows and doesn't know about Rat Boy.
Yes.
So there's the police and there are reporters there because Rat Boy has been stolen. But then later, Sandra Locke's character is shopping Rat Boy around almost like Frankenstein, like come see the freak.
Yeah.
And nobody knows whether to believe it. There's a lot of jokes about, is this a little man in a suit?
Right.
It seems like they never really landed on the reality of the movie. Even 20 minutes into this movie, you're like, we're still up in the dumpy hills of LA, this like weird dystopia. I was relieved when we finally got out into LA. There's some great locations in this movie, but for the first 20 minutes, you're like, oh, is this some like, you know, low budget indie? They're shooting up in the, you know, in the hills of Griffith Park, and we're never going to actually see LA.
I was concerned about that. And also, as we started this again, like I said, I really had no idea what the premise was. I thought it was going to be sort of a Mask type story where Sandra Locke was Cher and Rat Boy was kind of an Eric Stoltz character, but that is not what this is at
all.
Well,
there are shades of that. There are shades of that because that's how I don't know how heartbreaking the movie feels. Sandra Locke has said what appealed to her about the material, and I'm sure a lot of people were scratching their heads and wondering, was that it felt like a fable.
Right.
She originally wanted Joy Behar to be her role. She did not want to star. It was not a starring vehicle. I know. This would have been real catnip to the ladies on The View.
Why? So this brings up another question, which is, why is Sandra Locke so steeped in comedians of the 80s? Because we will talk about a handful more that just pop up. But I know she said she wanted to make a dark comedy. Did she know all these stand-ups and these comedians, or did she think, oh, I'm making a comedy, even if you can't tell, and therefore I'm going to cast it with comedians to help the comedy?
All questions I don't know the answer to, but the movie does have a kind of a larger than life feel.
Yeah.
And so I think the comedians in the movie really work. And I would say the movie kind of kicks into high gear might be too complimentary, but it kicks into some kind of fun gear when Rat Boy is brought home and we meet Sandra Locke's brothers.
Right. And just before we get to that, I do have a question for you, which is, did this really strike home? I'm thinking mainly of your work with the Weekly World News, and that Rat Boy seems like the story you might have taken on driving around in your pink Oldsmobile Firenza and your bolo tie as you're chasing down a story like Rat Boy.
Now, some of the listeners may not know, but I cut my journalistic teeth, got my bona fides on at the Weekly World News in Lantana, Florida. Yeah, that was like my Almost Famous, except at the Weekly World News. And we did cover some Rat Boy-like characters. There was a Wolf Boy, who was in South America, who was a fuzzy-faced boy that was often featured, who actually was just a little boy who had a disease where you grow fur on your face. But in the world of Weekly World News, he was fun Wolf Boy.
Okay.
So yeah, Rat Boy did strike a chord. Did strike a chord. In fact, the Weekly World News was always showing up in pop culture around this time, 80s and 90s. I was surprised there wasn't a WWN reference.
It felt like the pitch for this, or even the idea, might have come off of the screenwriter seeing Weekly World News in the grocery store line. You know, and they even mentioned that she says she's going to sell the story to the National Intruder at one point. But yeah, that's so meeting the brothers, as you mentioned, we get a little more dimension on her character, but I still have no idea what she's about. They say she's always got a scheme. And this right away, she has conned the con men out of Rat Boy, the con men who kidnapped Rat Boy in the first place. And now she's got bigger schemes where she's going to just plaster the story everywhere and make a name for herself, get rich. And yet she seems to have unlimited funds.
By the time that press conference rolls around, I tell you, we get his hair cut, get him some help with his public speaking, he'll be great.
He's gonna need more than a haircut and elocution lessons, for crying out loud.
She puts Rat Boy up eventually at the chateau. She throws money around like crazy. That doesn't make sense. But I do not want to skip over what you brought up. The two brothers are Louis Anderson and somebody who, every time I see him, I get so excited when I see him.
He's
on
great.
Screen. Garrett Graham, who is in Phantom of the Paradise. He's in Used Cars. He's in Terror Vision. He's just a wonderful actor and hilarious. He's just perfect for the kind of, are you kidding me, lines that are thrown around in this. And so is Louis Anderson. I mean, honestly.
Yeah. No, I really liked them as a threesome.
Yeah.
These siblings. And I would say the big laugh that I had, and I had a couple, but the first really big laugh I had in this movie was when Rat Boy freaks out and attacks Louis Anderson and is just wonderfully rat-like as he kind of scurries around the apartment biting and scaring everyone, and I'm giggling away.
There's like Pointer Sisters bopping in the background. Suddenly, you know, the tone shifts and we've got a real 80s vibe. They'll use this every time Rat Boy tries to make a break for it and scrambles and there's hijinks, then we get this sort of like Neutron Dance type song playing.
There's a hot soundtrack, and I have to say, I just want to get back. If you're listening and you haven't seen the movie, just Google Rat Boy. I just want people to realize, I mean, obviously Rick Baker, Academy Award winner, knows what he's doing. I don't know what the mandate was when they were trying to think of what would be a fun character for this movie. I mean, I'm trying to think of what is the saddest element of this character. I think it's the sad black eyes. Like, Rat Boy has sharp eyes.
Yeah, that's it, for sure. Otherwise...
This is not a fun Chuck E. Cheese
well,
fella.
But yet, at times, even earlier in the movie, she gives him a radio and sunglasses, and he's doing, like, Teen Wolf-style dancing.
But even with that, it's not fun because the Rat Boy is making these sad little screechy noises. Like he sounds tortured.
Well, that's the first time they actually establish that Rat Boy can communicate with words is just, it's just kind of thrown in like 20 minutes into the movie when Sandra Locke, who is just, as the movie goes on, she's just more and more of an absurd character. But anyway, they've set Rat Boy up in the chateau for some reason, and Louis Anderson comes in and finds Rat Boy sort of turning the hotel room into a version of his little underground den where he's got all his antiques. He's smoking a pipe that comes out of nowhere, but Louis Anderson's like, hey.
Hey, this place is a pigpen. Jeez, you know, you can't have all this stuff. You gotta organize it. You gotta get this stuff cleaned up. You paid a lot of money for this place. Jeez. There's smoke in here. You know, that stuff will stunt your growth. So I'm supposed to ask you, is there anything I can do for you?
And that's when Rat Boy responds for the first time with his squeaky dialogue, but we come to understand that he can talk.
Yeah. Yeah. I there's a lot glazed over about Rat Boy's what he can and can't do. And also, I think kind of the biggest thing, and I don't want to start quoting Roger Ebert again, because I think I overquoted him last season. But he gave the movie 2 stars, and his big thing was not knowing Rat Boy's origin story.
Yeah, they don't go there.
I agree. I mean, I've seen a lot of reviews refer to him as a disfigured man rat. I guess I hadn't even gotten there. I was like, is it a disfigured man rat, or is it just a rat who's super large? I confess, I might have missed something.
Well, what is definitely established is that he, I think, has a human mother, because he has a little book that he keeps that his mom gave him with a handwritten inscription that says, you know, from mom. And we have an understanding that whatever, he's separated from his parents, and maybe that's something that, and he calls out for his mom when he's in a panic and the world seems too fast for him. He calls out for mom, and then eventually,
just to make the character that much more heartbreaking and insanely sad.
And we get a little bit of insight from Billy Bird, the character actor who is the psychic, who you've seen a million times before. Just one more face that pops in the first half an hour of this movie. Another one. She starts shopping Rat Boy around to movie producers, then to MTV, and Nina Blackwood shows up.
But his greatest talent is in music, so I thought his first public appearance should be on MTV.
Well, he's got a great look, but, you know, does he have a hit record or an album or a video? Because it really, you know, if he doesn't, there's absolutely nothing that I can do.
Really fun. Really fun cool. Scene.
And then she finally gets an invite to a Hollywood elite party via a producer who is played by Tim Thomerson, who you've seen that face before. He's Jack Death in Tracers and Brick Bardo and Dull Man, to cult classic Full Moon movies. And I didn't realize that he was a Comedy Store regular. He was a stand-up as well. So, again, factors into this, the comedy element.
Yeah, I wonder if Sandra Locke dated any comedians when she was not dating Clint.
We haven't even, must have, because she's entered into this world. Then we get to the big
Well, I knew this 80s party was going to be fun, and it did not disappoint.
It really did not. And I was so excited by this point. We've seen so many fun faces. And then, again, like I said, I didn't know where this was going. And suddenly, this shifts gears into a Hollywood story. And we're going to go to a Hollywood 80s party. And
big white limo from the chateau to this 80s party, which is sleazeball central. There are big shoulder pads and neon signage, and everybody's wearing sunglasses.
Every 80s sleazeball you can imagine, including John Lovitz and Bill Maher.
So good. When I first saw Lovitz, I was like, oh, it's a John Lovitz. He must have been an extra. And then I was like, oh, no. He's coming in here. This is a nice chunky speaking part.
Yeah, this feels so like a great. First role for him.
And not only that, but the maitre d' from Ferris Bueller. Of course that guy's holding coke.
Maitre d' from Ferris. That's who that was. I was like, who is this guy? And I couldn't. The digging didn't take me deep enough. Thank you for that. Oh, my God.
And Rat Boy puts on the sunglasses and is dancing up a storm. And this was, I was hoping the movie might strike a more joyful note at
Me
this
too.
Moment where everybody's going to start loving Rat Boy, and Rat Boy is going to be, you know, kids are going to be getting rat tails and doing the Rat Boy
totally,
dance.
But instead he gets roofied
and jumps off a building. He gets Mickey.
Oh my God. We also skipped over the fact that he has an acting instructor because they want him to be TV ready. And lo and behold, his acting instructor is Christopher Hewitt, none other than Mr. Belvedere.
Streaks on the china, never met it before. Who cares?
Holy shit. This thing gets better and better.
So good. Mr. Bentley from the Jeffersons wasn't available, so they brought in Mr. Belvedere.
I just
want to say one thing that also kept me chuckling through this whole movie.
Yeah.
Is I kept picturing Clint Eastwood
me too.
Watching this in the editing
me
bay.
Too.
And I was like, what is he thinking? And what were his notes that Sandra Locke, what did they, you know, butt heads over? I read that he, you know, got involved in the editing and was too involved in the casting, but I was like, Who's Clint casting? What is he even thinking?
Based on the stuff that we both were talking about at the beginning and the element of control that he seemingly needed to assert over her, that maybe he was trying to sabotage the whole thing conceptually. Like he thought if she has a big stinker for her first movie, she'll be put off from it and maybe not want to do it again, which wasn't the case. But premise-wise, I mean, how could he... Okay, I mean, you know, how could
he... keep in mind, I mean, he just made the two biggest movies of his career were him driving around
true.
With an orangutan that's getting true. In fisticuffs.
Rat boy. This goddamn rat boy.
I That's looked, all I was I thinking. A, I the did a whole Google time. Search. I was like, where am I going to find a picture of Clint and Rat Boy?
You mean with his arm around Rat Boy? Yeah, because
exactly.
He's just floating around. He's just lurking, probably right to the right of her.
If the animal wants to. I'm not just the actor in the film, I'm part of the production too. So if the animal wants to steal the film, fine, let him steal it, as long as the film works. The animal doesn't get the check, I do.
There is a little bit of character development that has happened in this time. We've come to realize that Rat Boy is in love with Sandra Locke's character, and he starts to pluck his whiskers out because he's surrounded by beautiful people in Hollywood, and he believes that he's ugly. And
all you got to do is like get a nose job, get your ears fixed, get your teeth fixed, shave some of that hair off your hands. And just be yourself.
Garrett Graham, the one of her brothers, gives the cliched, don't do that to yourself. Be yourself, Rat Boy, speech at
and
the
I
party.
Liked it.
Which was nice.
That worked for me.
And those whiskers, they're a part of you, Eugene. Part of who you are.
Eugene, ugly.
But, you know, there's just these little drips and drabs of character development. Sandra Locke is not doing anything to help her character's case. It seems like she's just focused on the movie.
She's not. I think she was wearing a lot of hats. I would have loved to seen her character either be more of a sleazeball.
Yes.
Because she's got a lot of big characters to compete with, including a person in a rat suit. and these comedians. So there's a lot of scenery chewing going on. So I would have loved her, you know, leaning into almost delivering like a Parker Posey type.
Yeah, right.
You know, real jerk, and then she can have a turn later. Or, you know, she's, boy, now I'm going to sound like a real jerk. Or I was going to say, oh, the girl, she's more of the gal next door who is caught up. She's a super nice, sweet person, yeah, caught up in circumstances, right, beyond her control. And she's kind of, I feel like she was kind of playing it both ways.
Yes.
A little bit. And I wasn't sure what to think. I think we want to be, you know, as in love with her as Rat Boy is.
Yes. I agree.
And
I she's
wasn't
a
quite
real
feeling that.
Yeah, she's a real piece of crap because she's got all kinds of schemes. And this basically, so Rat Boy jumps off the roof of the chateau. And,
but I think she needed a couple more schemes.
Yes. It got convoluted. I didn't understand. Well, we get to a point where Robert Townsend is introduced as basically his babysitter.
He becomes almost like the second lead.
Yeah, but it makes no sense. Why does she need somebody to babysit? She already has these brothers that have been set up as having everything but time and totally in for her schemes. Why do we need this third person to come in? So it's
well,
established
I think,
that
there
maybe
was
there's some
where
connection.
They bonded there. I think they tried to, you know, draw a line between two outsiders.
Oh, okay.
And he, I don't know, somehow respects Robert Townsend, and Robert Townsend then kind of sees an opening for some quick cash,
right,
to
right
be the babysitter.
And that comes out of this uneven scene where Rat Boy ends up in one of the rougher neighborhoods in LA and witnesses this big gang bust that just goes on for 2 minutes too long. You're like, why is this happening? And that ushers in Robert Townsend's character, but it's a strange tonal drop.
For Robert Townsend, I was curious. It's a good role, and this movie came out, I think it was a little before Hollywood Shuffle, but I wasn't sure. I was like, is this the type of movie that Robert Townsend is complaining about the roles he's getting in Hollywood Shuffle, or is this one of the good ones? Because he is kind of the second lead. He does get a lot to
like
do, but it also leads
cliche
into,
I mean,
caricature.
Literally, Rat Boy has a line where he says, "Home boy." Because Robert Townsend says, "You're my homeboy." It's so 80s.
And there are
horrible.
His best friends seem to be two
boy
prostitutes that,
yeah,
are.
And then Johnny Witherspoon shows up as a diamond dealer, trying to con Rat Boy into buying jewels for his clear ascent into Hollywood stardom.
Yes, as if this movie couldn't get any sadder. There's a scene where Rat Boy, having spent all this money on a jewel, and correct me if I'm wrong, for a jewel for Sandra Locke's character, is sent into a rainy, dingy, disgusting alleyway by Robert Townsend just to like chill and wait for Sandra Locke so he can surprise her. I didn't know what the plan was. Meanwhile, Robert Townsend gets a couple hookers and he's hanging out with them, having a good time.
Well, that's the perfect example of how this movie often doesn't make sense. Like, Robert Townsend delivers Rat Boy to a specific location at a specific time as instructed by Sandra Locke, and that is basically where she is to be on the Merv Griffin show. And she goes on the Merv Griffin show to talk about Rat Boy, and literally Rat Boy's outside there to meet with her, and they don't bring Rat Boy on the Merv Griffin show. Like, what? It doesn't make any sense. And then it just starts to drag and spiral from here. It was chaotic fun, and now it's just kind of a drag.
I'm kind of picturing, I don't know, for some reason I'm picturing like Merv Griffin's like, I'm not going to do a scene with that.
With the Rat Boy?
Keep Rat Boy outside. I want to say two things about this movie that I do like a lot. One is, this is a great LA locations movie.
Yes.
I mean, Thomas Anderson could cut this into Los Angeles Plays itself.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There is so much juicy, awesome Hollywood Boulevard footage. There's some great downtown stuff. There's just scene after scene. There's this long scene with Rat Boy and Robert Townsend driving, and you're just seeing so much of LA. There's the Million Dollar Theater. There's Sardo's.
Cinerama's in the background. We've done
some porno karaoke there before. Yeah, To Live and Dine in LA is playing on one of the marquees.
Oh, yeah.
All types of punks and 80s yep. Mohawk bad boys walking the Hollywood Boulevard streets. I'm loving all that.
Me too. I mean, it's fun to look at. It's so bizarre that you have to love that it exists. It's just, it doesn't stick the landing that it never really sets up in the first place.
Again, another big laugh for me was Rat Boy, two sex workers, and Robert Townsend in the car, and Rat Boy freaks the F out and starts smacking. I don't know where. Did Rat Boy have a cane? Starts smacking the yeah. prostitutes with a cane.
And Robert,
the car's going all over the road. Yep. It's absolute chaos. I am cracking up. I'm just loving it.
Whoa.
That kind of manic energy. Almost any time Rat Boy flips out, there's a time in the theater where Rat Boy flips out, and Rat Boy is climbing the drapes
again,
and
like
lights
a cockamamie,
are over, and I'm laughing. It's like a cartoon.
Cockamamie scheme that. So she, after the Merv Griffin show, she has a press junket where all these reporters are there, and Rat Boy is supposed to be there. Finally, he shows up, and evidently, Mr. Belvedere was supposed to teach him a monologue from some Greek tragedy, or I can't remember, some classic play. And instead, he starts, he has flashbacks to the gang arrest that he saw, and he's telling everybody to, like, get down. They're under arrest. He freaks out, and he causes total chaos, and all these reporters run into the street like a monster movie. What I was going to say is again, you talking about Rat Boy freaking out in the car, the commitment of that actor is so terrific. I when I'm looking at Rat Boy, I see a Rat Boy, and I'm moved by the character.
I am too. I would love to see, I don't know, I almost want to see like a Rat Boy Guillermo del Toro reboot.
Oh, that would be great. I'm all about it. So we spiral out of Hollywood. He's on the run with Robert Townsend. They steal a Corvette in a Vons parking lot, also another great location. And they go out into the country, and there's an APB. Everybody's looking for Rat Boy, and Sandra Locke has had a change of heart, and she finds him at his childhood home, as best we understand, and they have a heart-to-heart there.
Right. And again, anytime we're talking about the childhood home or the card from mom and all that, I feel more confused than less confused, and I'm picturing his mom consummating with a rat. I'm not sure.
I don't
how
know.
This kid came about. Yeah.
If you say so.
I almost want either nothing or full explanation.
They're closer to
but
nothing.
Yeah, I think you need an origin story.
I guess. I mean, I think closer to nothing is better in my book, but I don't know. Cause we never find out. And then we have an extended police chase. This is where Clint clearly, like, threw his weight around. They're using Clint's crew. It has the look of a Clint Eastwood movie. And Sandra Locke says that this is the part of the movie that she hates the most, that the studio made her do this aspect of the movie. And it is. It's a drag to watch.
It's a drag to watch. I can't say that it wasn't the car chase that killed the movie for me.
Get Rat Boy in the car. More cops.
You also have Eastwood regular Bill McKinney showing up. We've talked
for a
about
hot
him last
second.
When he was in the gauntlet doing Clint a solid, or maybe doing Sandra a solid, who knows?
And then we have this magical realism type ending where Rat Boy splits up the gem that he bought from Johnny Witherspoon, and he and Sandra Locke have this touching moment, and she thinks he dies, but then sees Rat Boy up in a tree, and the sunlight glints off the little glass bauble that he bought, and then Rat Boy walks off into the green hills,
looking very leprechaunish. I think agreed. He clicks his heels
almost, and he sparkles. He becomes magic by the end.
Right. And then the needle drop on Mr. Personality as the credits roll.
The most 80s version of Personality you could ever imagine, with high synth and overproduced.
Yeah, I really hate that song.
I do too. I do too.
I mean, I guess I think of it almost like a children's rhyme. So, Rat Boy, where do we, where do we land?
Where do we land?
I mean, we've had a lot of fun chatting about it. There's certainly, like we said, character actor gold, amazing locations. It was one for the books.
For me, full scanners, well, baby.
Full scanners. Well, I don't understand what that even means, because we're not using those codes anymore for season 2.
Oh, is this a transitional moment?
This is a transitional moment that I'm glad we're doing for the audience. Yes, it's a hat on a hat when we're using these code words. Let's just
lay it out,
be honest. Just lay it out there. Did the movie blow your mind, or did it not blow
Absolutely.
Your mind?
It's the fact that this thing exists in the first place is mind-blowing. And then you see the money, talent, and energy that has been put into it, and you just can't believe it. And even if it falls apart, man, for me, the first half was just a joy to watch, just as a time capsule. It's so strange.
Okay, I see what we're going to do. I see what this season's going to be all about.
What does that mean?
Good cop, bad cop.
No!
This movie is not that fun to watch. I mean,
I disagree.
It would be hard for me to this would be fun to throw on during a party.
Yeah, but you can't tell me that, like, you weren't amused in the first half of this movie.
I told you the parts I was amused. I was amused when Rat Boy freaks out and starts, you know, beating
But did you know any of those people were going to be in the movie, and it was just going to be one crazy 80s face after another?
Yeah, but I don't know if that really constitutes a mind blower.
Not
for
good
me.
Enough. Okay. Yeah, but it's a story about a rat boy.
And I like that. And as we've discussed for this show, just because my mind is blown very few times. I don't know how you have any mind left. It's blown so many times. I have to have a movie where I'm like picking up the phone. You will not believe this.
That's what I'm saying. You will not believe this. Oh.
Well, I guess I believed it. No, I don't want. Let me put it this way. When I was sitting down, I was so excited. I was like, I want to be an ally and be on the phone telling everyone about this Sandra Locke gem.
I want to
write an open letter to Deadline Hollywood calling Clint out on.
It is not, you know, that.
Watering down and stifling this voice. And I didn't feel like this was that movie. That said, I'm just as intrigued with Sandra Locke and her career and her story as ever. I'm really excited to watch
Impulse,
yeah. Her second movie that has Teresa Russell. That sounds interesting. And that's, again, not to lean too heavily on Siskel and Ebert, but Gene and Roger liked it. 2 thumbs up. So I'm excited to watch that and just get into more of her acting career. I think this was a super interesting movie that I would recommend to a couple people. My brain's just not dripping out my ears.
One person.
For me, a mind-blowing movie is, you know, it's like a 4-star. It's like, you know.
Okay.
And, you know, for you, it's like, let me light up a doob, and now I'm loving, look, it's Louis Anderson. You could have just shut the movie off after Louis Anderson. Your mind was blown.
Well, I believed in it. I thought that maybe it would keep rising, and it did not. It deflated. But I will say, along the lines of what you said about Impulse, I want to reiterate how awesome I think Death Game looks, and I think that would be worthwhile. And I do recommend A Reflection of Fear. It is it's a well-made movie, and maybe the twist that comes, it feels outdated, but her performance is really excellent. And then you also get, why do I keep forgetting Robert Shaw's name? That's insane. Yeah, Robert Shaw's in it. Sally Kellerman is in it. It's a stacked cast, and the director is...
I mean, Robert Shaw might have forgotten he was in it.
Hey-o.
Very good chance.
It was right about that time.
Glug, 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 glug.
Anyway.
The listeners can't see. I'm doing a glug, glug, glug. Yeah, that's right. I'm zinging off Robert Shaw's alcoholism. Too soon?
Some might say.
I'm very intrigued by Death Game. Yeah, I love Colleen Camp is so interesting. Now she's like a big-time producer.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah.
Well, we did it. We watched Rat Boy. I'm proud of us. This was just a taste of wonderful things to come. We do have a stacked and fun season of movie choices and some surprises along the way. I'm really excited.
And some surprise guests.
But that's what I'm talking about.
Okay. I mean, surprise movies and surprise guests. All right, Lex. And anything else the listeners should be doing in between episodes and their sad little lives between our exciting, fun episodes? What should they be doing? Their little fingers, their little hands.
Well, they can always rate and review if they haven't yet. I can't believe they've gone through now 9 episodes and not expressed their love of this podcast.
I mean, some people just like to, you know, Rat Boy up and hoover up all the yummy, yummy content like little Rat Boy with some cheese and not leave reviews. Good reviews.
Good reviews.
I don't want some wise guy leaving a lackluster review because I called him a little, you know, podcast rat.
Well, I will say that Duncan is in charge of an excellent Instagram feed for Didn't I Blow Your Mind this time? So we have fun
on Instagram.
At least follow. The feed, because there's some great images, great posters, great commentary from
I think
one
the fun
Duncan
facts
Birmingham.
Are pretty fun.
They are. So is that it for us?
I think that's it. This was a lot of fun. I'm happy to be back.
Me too. See you next time.
Clean up on aisle 3. What's our outro? Still working on
it. My head hurts.